Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour we will be discussing last night. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, I don't know how that snuck in there, but let's try it again. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, the go-home show to this Sunday's big Extreme Rules event at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. So let's start right out with a little bit of news before we get to this week's Monday Night Raw recap. Ruby Riott apparently evaluated. She could be out several weeks, maybe more, maybe more. So that kind of leaves the Riott squad without a leader. As we all know, Bray Wyatt made his return last night. Some come in, some go out. Fandango with a shoulder injury, 6 months or more on the shelf. So that's the latest injury update from the WWE. So let's jump right into this week's Monday Night Raw. We start Monday Night Raw backstage with Roman Reigns walking toward the ring and Bobby Lashley getting in his path. Asking him where he thinks he's going, Roman Reigns says, "I'm going out to my ring." Bobby Lashley says, "Well, I hope you're going out there to call me out. Because if you're not, I'm going to come out there anyway and show you what I can do." So there's a little bit of tension, and Roman Reigns hits the ring and says, "Look, I don't know about you, but it's the first time anybody's ever asked me to call them out. So I'm kind of curious about just exactly what he can do. So I'm going to call him out." Now, let's discuss this for a minute. This is probably the way you should have perceived or written things for Bobby Lashley from the very beginning. For Bobby Lashley to come out with very little intensity, smiling, wearing stupid clothes, glad handing everybody, talking about his sisters and how much he loves them and doing this crazy, dumb, ridiculous thing with Sami Zayn that damn near killed any momentum he had. It's very hard to just hit the reset button and say, okay, forget all that. We made a mistake. So now this is the Bobby Lashley we want you to buy into. And the WWE does that way too often. If given a choice between the obvious, this is the way you probably should handle this guy coming in, and here's a way to definitely guarantee this is going to flop, they always seem to choose the flop, then realize they've chosen the flop and just kind of ask you as fans, don't pay any attention to that. That never happened. Let's start from scratch instead of just doing it right the first time. So this is a much better Bobby Lashley who comes out and it's very intense. Looks like it's going to break down into a fight, and Kurt Angle and Constable Corbin come out, and Angle says, "No, no, no, this is not happening tonight. Save it for Extreme Rules," to which they just start going at each other. The dressing room's clear. A brawl ensues that takes a long, long time to play out. Here's the thing. It did not escape my attention that a non-wrestling fan who was watching with me said, if these guys are all supposed to be pro wrestlers and all these guys are tough, how come they can't hang one guy back? Should they not be able to really just throw these guys right the hell out? And the answer is, yeah, you got to accept that if you're a pro wrestling fan. Of course, nine guys should be able to hold Bobby Lashley or Roman Reigns back. Because if any one of them nine guys fought him, it would be like, well, it's kind of an even match. But together, they can't hold him back. But, you know, that's the world of wrestling. So they had a pretty good brawl with Bobby Lashley getting the early advantage and then Roman Reigns kind of getting in the ring and doing the suicide dive over the top rope that knocks everybody down and then doing a little bit of a football fake to get back at Bobby Lashley. And all in all, it wasn't terrible. It was much better, especially Bobby Lashley, was much better in this role than the role they've initially gave him of this happy-go-lucky, I love my family, I'm glad to be here type guy. There's a much better intensity in Bobby Lashley when he says less and does more. So as far as the opening goes, it didn't really set the stage for anything later on in the night. They didn't say, well, because of this, Bobby Lashley and someone is going to fight Roman Reigns and someone. They didn't pull that. It more set the stage for their fight at Extreme Rules this Sunday. But it still put Bobby Lashley in a much better light. And to a certain extent, I think it put Roman Reigns in a better light. So I'd consider it a successful opening, Mike.
Yeah, it was a successful opening. You know, a lot of the times, and you talked about this just now, but a lot of the times, the WWE does not live up to that old adage from carpentry. Measure twice, cut once. You know, they don't do that. They eventually get around to what should be done, but it's months down the line, maybe years down the line. You know, and that's what this is here. This is the way. And look, you're right about these brawls. These brawls. You know, I don't know if the guy you were watching it with, this wrestling fan you were watching it with, understands that. Generally speaking, throughout the history, if you've been watching wrestling a number of years, like you and I and I guess whoever else is in on the call has, we understand that that's how this is. When one guy should be able to throw another guy out when their size is matched, but that's the way it is in wrestling. That's the way it's been for ever since I've been following wrestling. The brawl starts, the locker room empties out, and then they have to hold him back. Now, also, did you catch one thing? When Roman Reigns started to break through, the people were cheering for Roman Reigns.
Yes. Yeah, I did notice it. Well, because, you know, it's an exciting thing to watch. And to your point, look, if you're going to nitpick everything that doesn't make sense in pro wrestling, then you shouldn't be able to whip a man to the ropes. Because if you whip a man to the ropes, there's no logical reason he's going face first into the ropes. There's no logical reason he'd turn his back, hit the ropes, and bounce back off. That would be stupid. He'd just fall down. Or he'd hit the ropes, you know, with his chest or his stomach. So you can't nitpick everything about wrestling. But there were some things in there I didn't like. There was this weird thing where Finn Balor took a shot at Baron Corbin, and I'm like, why? I know they're going to feud and everything, but I don't understand that. I mean, were they told to do that? I don't know. That I didn't like. What I did like is that it showed Bobby Lashley in a way that fans can either get behind and say, okay, I'm for that, or they can reject and say, well, I think he's, you know, a hothead, or I think he thinks he's better than everybody. It doesn't matter whether you like him or you don't like him, but it's a Bobby Lashley you can. So, Todd, I thought that was much better, but like Mike said, it's a too little too late sometimes. They do this so often.
You're absolutely right, Dave. It's a little too late, like you said, I remember a couple of years ago when Taker and Lesnar broke out in a brawl during that excitement like that. It wasn't that great like this one, actually.
Well, you know, you have to accept that they're going to break free of some of the guys and stuff. That's a non-factor, really, as far as I'm concerned. But what I do say is that the things that come before this can't be necessarily forgotten or forgiven. In other words, we're going to remember this Bobby Lashley who said, I love my three sisters, and Sami Zayn bringing three guys in drag and saying they were his sisters, and him smiling saying, that's pretty funny, Sammy. That's creative. That's fun. Instead of that intense guy. Now, if he had came out there and said not a word, just stormed out there, destroyed all three of them guys and Sami Zayn, then this is the guy we saw last night. But for him to say, well, I respect even Sami Zayn, but I don't respect Roman Reigns. Why? Sami Zayn cheated. Roman Reigns didn't do anything. So I'm not really sure that makes a lot of sense, but at least it gives us a look into Bobby Lashley that it can accept and that feels real. This other crap he was doing did not feel real, but it could be too little too late. We'll see how things go. But the WWE always seems to eventually find the right thing to do, but oftentimes it's after the horse left the barn. So anyway, after this brawl breaks up, we are taken backstage where Alexa Bliss and Mickie James are watching it in horror because they're only professional wrestlers too. And say, wow, that was intense. That was very violent, but that's nothing like what we're going to do to Nia Jax. And Natty. So that's what's next up. Nia Jax and Natty against Alexa Bliss and Mickie James in a match that I would call kind of blasé. I mean, listen, Nia Jax is going to do what Nia Jax does, and you either like it or you don't like it. She's not. We had once said maybe she's going to get a little bit better, and she has. And, you know, she'll keep learning and she'll just grow. I think she's probably hit it. This is the Nia Jax you're going to get. And you're going to have to accept it. That's what she does. She sold pretty well to Mickie James for a little while. And I guess the whole crux of the thing was this is an Extreme Rules match on Sunday where Alexa Bliss can use the kendo stick. Alexa Bliss can use a chair. Alexa Bliss can cheat. Presumably, Mickie James can come down to ringside and help her. I don't know. But I don't think this really made anything more intense. I would have loved to have seen a brawl happen with, you know, outside the ring and it really get out of hand. Again, I know they didn't want to do it because they just did it. But it is an Extreme Rules match. And we saw just only the kendo stick and a couple of shots. And I don't know. I mean, this didn't leave me with any feeling like, oh, this is going to be an intense match on Sunday. So I think really it didn't succeed as being what it should have been, which was a warm up to what could happen on Sunday, Mike.
Yeah, this is just another version of what we saw with Roman Reigns, you know, just a warm-up. Now, one thing that I do enjoy with what they do, now, they're not telling Nia to do it, but everybody else, when Alexa hits them with that right hand, they go down like a ton of bricks. I like that, you know. I mean, we saw Natty do it, you know. I'm looking at Natty, and I'm saying, is that Lana? Because the way they had her dress gave me the feeling that was Lana, but I knew that was Natty, though.
Yeah, they're definitely telling people to sell the Alexa Bliss punch. That's one of her big things. They probably won't have Nia do it because she's so heavy, and you know, it wouldn't make sense, but. Yeah, they're definitely selling that. Now, what we should say is Kevin Owens has come backstage and basically said he can't wrestle. And he still showed up for work. And he's going to sit in Kurt Angle's office so that Braun Strowman will not get to him. Another weird thing, because I've actually went to the TV guide section of my guide on my DirecTV. And the blurb for Monday Night Raw was, after being dumped off stage on a porta potty, how will Braun Strowman continue to torture Kevin Owens? So they're fully aware. They're fully aware that this is making Braun Strowman look like a bully. They're fully aware that this is making Braun Strowman look like the bad guy. They're fully aware of it. And they're doing it anyway. Now, they're not making Kevin Owens the most likable person in the world, but at that same stage of the game, he hasn't done anything horrible enough to, merit some of this. So I think this is a mistake. I think it's a big mistake. But this is where Kevin Owens sits for the whole show in Kurt Angle's quote-unquote office, which really didn't look like an office. It just looked like, a backdrop, but whatever. So we get to Mojo Rawley, who, say what you want about Mojo. I hated the Hype Bros tag team. Hated it. Just hated it. I hated the gimmick. I hated their move. I hated it all. Just didn't like it. But Mojo Rawley, as a heel, is what I want a heel to be. He comes down, he looks intent. He looks mean. He looks like he's not kidding. He looks like it's not predetermined. He looks like he is heading for a fight. And he has an intensity about him. And he has a mannerism or an aura about him that just feels legit. Really does. I'm very impressed with him. Because this doesn't happen that often with athletes from other sports getting it that quickly. I think Mojo's got it now. And I was very worried because I said, well, here we go. He's picked on Noé José a couple of weeks in a row. He had a victory over him. The WWE's booking usually means Noé José is going to win tonight. And there goes Mojo Rawley's nice, push somewhere. So I was very, very skeptical of how this match was going to work out, but they did the right thing. At the end, Mojo Rawley wins. He looked good winning. He looked intense winning. And truthfully, I think they might have something here with Mojo Rawley if they give him half a chance, Mike.
Right, but also, if you look at that match, No Way Jose got in some pretty good shots in that match. They were both, it sounded like they were both throwing hands and throwing some pretty stiff shots. Some of those forearms and elbows and stuff like that that No Way Jose hit him with. It sounded like they landed, and they landed very good. So, it wasn't all bad from No Way Jose's thing. Yeah, he lost the match, but he looked good in losing. And the right guy won. And look, one thing about those offices, those so-called, quote, offices, when has any of those so-called, quote, offices looked nothing more than like a backdrop,
Usually they look like a backdrop. Once in a blue moon, if it's Stephanie's office or something, they'll put up a poster or something to make it look a little better, a couple of chairs or a desk. This was nothing. This was like the minimal effort they could put into making it look like an office. But Todd, I like Mojo. I think he has a future here if they treat him right and they use him right.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. You will probably see him get a mid card title push sometime in the upcoming months. Well, like you said, he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be in the upper mid card or the upper mid card for like a mid title shot. You never know.
I think he could go there. I really do. And to be honest with you, I think if he can excel, and he can sharpen up his interview skills a little bit more. And really come across as that typical heel. See, the great thing about Mojo is he understates it, Like, there's too many heels that when they're given the microphone, their very first thought is, let me say horrible things. Let me just get out there and say, I can't wait to hear him scream in agony, and I hope there are little kids watching when I break his arm, and it traumatizes them for life. Mojo is kind of like he underplays the heel. And by doing it, it almost makes you feel he's not kidding because he's not over exaggerating it. He's not a satire of a bad guy. He just feels like a guy who you say, yeah, I don't like that guy. He's got a chip on his shoulder and I don't like him. But it's just a little bit underplayed, just enough so you say it kind of feels real. You know what I mean by that, Mike? It's not over the top, so you sort of feel it's his real personality.
Yeah, you watch some of these movies, and you you watch some of these bad guys, particularly some of these Bond bad guys, and they'll sit there and they'll James Bond bad guys, they'll sit there and they'll tell you their plan. You know, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. And eventually James Bond comes in and stops them because he knows the plan and he knows what they're going to do. But they do that. And you got some wrestlers that's their type of bad guy. You know, that's their type of – Ric Flair was that way. He'd come out and say all that stuff. Usually he – sometimes he do, sometimes he not. But that's – but I like what Mojo is doing. I like him being understated. He reminds me a lot of Hacksaw Butch Reed.
Yeah, you know, bad guys who you just said to yourself, they don't think they're a bad guy. See, it's very hard for Baron Corbin not to think he's a bad guy. He knows he cheats. He knows he's playing off Stephanie McMahon. He knows he's ruining opportunities for whatever. So he knows he's the bad guy. He relishes being evil. As opposed to the Mojo character who you say, Mojo is this guy who says, look, I'm getting to the top and I don't really care what happens to you. It's almost like in UFC where they have those interviews with the UFC guys and before the matches, and one of them just rubs you the wrong way. And you say, I'm sure he's not really a bad guy in outside this ring, this octagon, but he rubs me the wrong way, and I don't want him to win. Mojo is like that, and that's gold because there's not a lot of guys that does that. So I hope he continues that, and I hope that they appreciate that. He does have to get better in the ring. I mean, he's not gold in the ring yet, but hey, give him a little bit. Spent most of his time as a tag team wrestler. So we should say that Dr. Shelby is gone after that ridiculous debacle. There's another thing with WWE hitting the reset button. So this week we still have Sasha Banks and Bayley in therapy, but we're not really subjected to most of it. The announcers are talking over it and we hear vague sentences here and there. But when we do hear a little bit, it's not comedy. It's serious. And she's saying, look, you know, I was her best friend in NXT. I was her best friend. Even when we fought, I was her best friend. And I was always there for her. And every chance she gets, she stabs me in the back. How many times am I supposed to let this girl continue to stab me in the back before I stand up for myself? Which makes sense. The whole therapy thing doesn't make any sense. None. Zero. It's stupid. But if you're going to pull anything out of it at all, then this is what you have to do. Play it not for laughs. You have to play it serious with both sides airing their grievances. Oddly, they chose not to really let you listen. Last week, you had to listen to the whole ridiculous comedy routine. This week, they blurted 95% of it out with the announcers talking over it. For what reason, I don't know. I still think it's a bad idea. But again, Mike, it's like they find the right thing to do, or at least the better thing to do, but it's after the wrong thing's already been done.
Right. And we've basically seen this thing already basically twice, you know, Team Hell No, of course. And then remember that whole thing where they sent Enzo to therapy session or whatever, that type of thing. Now we said that one was kind of done right. It was done for last, but it was done right because of Enzo. You know, Enzo was the one that made that thing go. But anyway, yeah, they did it right this time. And this is a better setup for what we're planning for possible series of matches between these two girls.
Yeah, I mean, they got to the better way to do it. Number one, I still say it's a lousy idea. But if you're dead set on doing this lousy idea, then the best way to do it is the way you did it last night, as opposed to the way you did it last week. And unfortunately, I can't forget what you did last week because it made the whole thing goofy. And it felt so unreal. It was like watching a high school play. And this week it took a more serious tone, but how are we supposed to forget what happened last week, Todd? It was better, but I don't know if it's going to help.
I still don't like that what they're doing now with this therapy thing. Where Sasha Banks and Bayley. It was funny a couple of years ago, but still not funny today.
It can be funny if it's the right person, like Mike said. Enzo pulled it off perfectly, but that's because he's Enzo. You knew what was going to happen. So when Enzo, see, they took a very serious situation with Enzo, and then out of this whole entire thing, Enzo ends up having to go to anger management. And he doesn't really belong there anyway. And you can just, because Enzo is such a strong personality, we all say to ourselves, oh, my God, Enzo in anger management, that's going to be a sight. You know what I mean? You can already envision the problems that's going to happen. So that was gold. And it worked with Team Hell No because they had a bit of a chemistry of a weird thing. It was okay. But the Bayley and Sasha thing is supposed to be really ultra serious. And now they've gotten around to saying, well, let's make it ultra serious now. Let's not play it for laughs. But you already played it for laughs. That's the problem. You can't go through half a movie saying it's a comedy and then say, no, we changed our mind. It's a drama. Well, because it confuses the audience. So we'll see where this goes. I would just wrap this up as quickly as possible and get to the, you know, crux of the matter and see what's going to happen. This way's not working. Next we have the B team. And one is backstage putting on his Matt Hardy wig, Curtis Axel, and practicing his Matt Hardy impersonation. Bo Dallas comes in with his Bray Wyatt gear on and scares Curtis Axel, who apparently thinks it's Bray Wyatt. And I got to tell you, it's getting old. It's 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row now. It's getting old. I would love to see them say, look, comedy over. We have busted our ass for this title shot, and we're taking the belts. Yeah, we had some fun with this. Fun's over. This Sunday, we get to live out our dream, and we get to become the tag team champions. Instead, they still go for the goofiness. And what makes it probably even worse is that Matt Hardy, for 3 straight weeks, has to lose to guys who I can't remember the last time they won a match. As a solo. Can't remember the last time. So this makes Matt Hardy and the whole Woken thing just look like this guy's still, you know, this guy's no serious threat. And remember I told you guys, and people were writing me saying, you don't know this, how can you say that? You're just, you know, you don't like it, so you're picking on it. I told you the WWE was going to ruin any semblance of this Woken gimmick that you'd like. I told WWE fans, don't hold your breath on this Woken gimmick, and even if they do it, they're not going to do it the way you want them to do it. They're going to do it half-assed. He's going to lose 90% of his matches. He's going to look more like an idiot than, you know, a mad genius sort of thing. And was I right? They didn't know how to handle it. They didn't use it correctly. And now this whole Woken thing is just a big cesspool. It means nothing. Fans aren't even chanting delete anymore. Because it's not the same. You're right. I was no big fan of this Woken thing in Impact. But at least they went whole hog with it. At least they said, look, if we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's give it the 100% effort. Let's do the whole 9 yards. The craziness. Let's do the whole crazy crapola. And I hated it, but fans loved it. But I knew the WWE wouldn't put that effort into it. I just knew it. And I was right. So Matt Hardy, for the 3rd straight week, loses, making him look about as effectual as I don't know who. Bray Wyatt was at ringside, which is good to see. And he actually did some in-ring work at the end when the lights went out after Matt Hardy had lost. And when they come back on, Bray's in the ring with Matt Hardy, and they beat up the B team. So apparently he's okay. Apparently he's ready to go for Extreme Rules and everything is fine. But Mike, I think that there's not a lot of people looking forward to this match. I think this build-up has been at best mediocre and at worst really just quite frankly flat.
You're right on that. And the fact of the matter is, you know, can we just kind of get to the point of where, when we know it's coming, Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy break up. You know, they don't. We're just whatever career Bray Wyatt has, it's stalled right now. As long as he's in this tag team, you know. I mean, that's the case.
Yes.
And look, yeah. B team, yeah. If they would win the thing, it'd probably be them as tag team champions, as a transitional champion. But I almost rather see them win the thing and be done with this whole Matt Hardy, the leaders of worlds thing, be done with it. You know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I'd be rooting for the B team simply because I'm done with this Matt Hardy, Bray Wyatt team. Number one, there's very little chemistry. Number two, all you're really doing by putting them together is minimizing the effectualness of each one of them. Matt Hardy wants to go in this real satirical Looney Tunes comedy act, crazy thing, satire, Chikara type satire. And Bray Wyatt wants to go into this dark, demonic, evil, serious persona that was The Undertaker's shtick for a while or whatever, or at least, you know, some of the darker wrestlers. You can't put the two together. It doesn't work because Matt Hardy's got to lessen his and Bray Wyatt's got to lessen his so that they gel to a certain extent. If you want Matt Hardy to go back to this whole Woken thing on the compound, boxing kangaroos, flying drones, Senior Benjamin, children playing the piano, and you know, all that kind of stuff, go for it. I don't like it, but go for it. But then you got to bring Bray Wyatt back to doing what he does too. Together, this is not working at all. It's just not. And Matt Hardy now is being made to look. Here's what you got to remember. While Jeff is over there not doing the Woken thing, Matt Hardy may be a tag team champion, but he's over here getting pinned 3 weeks in a row by guys who hasn't won a match in 2 years until they started this B-team thing. So how good does this make Matt Hardy look? Isn't he supposed to be the leader of this whole thing? So, I don't know. Say what you want about it. I just think it's been a very ineffectual build up to a feud, and I don't think too many fans are looking forward to it. So then we get what the remainder of the Riot Squad backstage. And if there's anything good about Ruby Riott not being there, and there isn't really, so I'm grasping straws when I say this, because Ruby Riott is the glue that holds that together. But if there's anything at all, if there's one ray of sunlight in the darkness of the Riot Squad has lost their leader, it's that the other two girls now are forced, or the WWE are forced, to give them the time to flesh their characters out. And now we're starting to see a little bit more of exactly what I said Liv Morgan should be to begin with. And that's this crazy, weird, eccentric, you know, giggly, psychotic girl. And Sarah Logan being more the muscle and the redneck, you know, country type. And we're getting a little more of that. I liked what they did with Tyler Breeze, taking the T-shirts and then ripping them up. And then she jumped on Sarah Logan's back and took a piggyback ride out of there while Tyler Breeze is just, okay, whatever. Problem, unfortunately, is they are becoming like the Iconics. They do these things, and you say, that's good, that's heelish, that's fleshing out their character, and then they go out and get their ass kicked every single week. And if they get their ass kicked every single week, it's pretty hard to get heat, because the heat is constantly being – it's pretty hard to heat up something on a stove if you keep shutting the flame off. And that's kind of what happens. The flame is on, and instead of letting the pot boil, you shut the flame off. The flame off is when they lose, because the fans say, okay, they were bastards, but they lost, so they got what was coming to them. And if that keeps happening, you can't maintain any heat. And I don't see any heat on the Riot Squad because, or the Iconics, because of that same thing, Mike.
You're right. Now, But one thing about Tyler Breeze, with his partner being out for an extended amount of time, I think it's probably time the WWE think about sending him over to 205, because he's not going to be wrestling. I mean, they could pass him off as a wrestler against Sean against our friends, some of these guys, but not some of these bigger guys like Braun Strowman. He's only about 205 pounds, so it may be time for them to at least think for a short period of time of sending him to 205 Live. But yeah, I like what they're doing. We said about Sarah Logan, and she is the girl that they should get her out of that thing and let her go do her thing. I'm starting to think of the same thing about Liv Morgan, even though she lost the match, and we'll get to that. But even though she lost the match, I'm starting to see a lot in her character that I like. I mean, it's almost the same character that they gave AJ Lee early on,
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, she got that psychotic feel to her, and she does it well. I mean, she does the Harley Quinn thing better than Alexa Bliss, who they were going to try to give that to begin with. This works a lot better for her. Now, out of the three, I've had people say, well, we think Sarah Logan's the weak link of the three. I don't. I look at Sarah Logan and I say, that's the first girl that should be turned on by the Riot Squad. When push comes to shove, she's the oddball. You got a crazy psychopathic one who laughs and giggles and just, everything's funny to her, even when it's violent. You got Ruby Riott, who's like a, anarchist, who's just like, violence, violence, violence. They don't need Sarah Logan. And Sarah Logan would be that perfect sort of redneck country girl who, she's not a model. See, here's the thing. All of these girls, a lot of these girls, not all of them, a lot of these girls aren't really role models or heroic to girls because they say, well, I'll never look like that. This girl is this and this girl is that. Sarah Logan's kind of just looks like a normal girl. And because she looks like a normal girl, you can put yourself in her position. And if she was just tough redneck girl who's, never going to be a swimsuit model, never going to be a pinup girl, but she's out there kicking people's ass, you say, yeah, you go, girl. You know what I mean? That's the girl who probably you should try to relate to the audience. Because she's like the every girl, like Steve Austin was an everyman sort of thing. You know what I mean? So that would be the first one that I'd boot out of the Riot Squad, have a feud with. And I think Sarah Logan could have some popularity as that redneck sort of badass girl that you don't really want to get hot under the collar. The other two are really fleshing themselves out nicely. And Ruby Riott, it's a shame what happened to her because she's an excellent worker and she's excellent on the mic. As far as the Tyler Breeze thing, yeah, he's not going to do much on Raw as a solo guy. I'd love to see Tyler Breeze in 205 Live because I think he has the charisma and I think he has the mic skills and he already has the established character, and they really need a lot of that over on 205, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That would be a great idea to put Tyler Breeze on 205 Live. He could fit right in with those kind of people.
Yeah, and he could give a little personality and good mic skills and just there's a lot Tyler Breeze could offer 205 Live. Now, as far as the match itself, once again, Ember Moon, we knew she's going to win. I mean, the minute they said they're on their way to the ring to fight Ember Moon, I'm like, well, we know what's going to happen there. Now, I don't know why we can't have Sarah Logan jump in and cause a disqualification and beat up Ember Moon or whatever and just continue the, anarchy sort of thing. I don't know why we can't do that. But the WWE doesn't want that. These are the girls that create temporary heat, and then a face gets to put that heat out every week. So I don't know whether they're doing this. We're nobody without Ruby. I don't know whether they're going in that direction, and, we're directionless without our leader. I don't know. But it's not doing them any favors, just like it's not doing the Iconics any favors to lose every single week without fail. Every week. So that's a shame, really. We get to the backstage thing with Braun Strowman and Kevin Owen. And Kevin Owen is once again saying, you can't put me against him because I have a note. Kurt Angle saying, I have no intention of having you wrestle, but at Extreme Rules, you're going to be fighting him in a steel cage. Well, I don't know what the rules to the steel cage thing is. I don't know whether it's just a cage and you can't escape it. You have to pin or make the person submit. That could be one option. They didn't say. Or the second option is you escape the cage. But if that second option is the way this cage match is, then this match makes no sense because Kurt Angle said, because you keep running away, I'm going to put you in a match where you can't run away. Well, if the object of the match is to escape the cage, that's the entire object is to run away. You don't have to beat your opponent down more than just enough to get out that door or get up that cage. So we're going to have to find out what the rules of this is before Sunday when we go through our pre-show, because if the rules are pinfall or submission only, then Kevin Owen has zero chance at all of winning this match. There's not even a inkling of a chance that Kevin Owens can win this match. But I would argue that if he could escape the cage or climb it, Kevin Owens will indeed win this match. And the reason I say that is because Vince McMahon, as we know, has that philosophy as if you hold the Money in the Bank briefcase, you really don't need to win any matches. He wouldn't let Braun Strowman get pinned or submit, certainly. But he certainly would let KO escape the cage and look like he was devious and clever and cowardly. So we're going to have to find that out. Let's see. What comes next? We get Constable Corbin and Elias against Finn Balor and Bobby Roode. Elias announces he's putting out an album. That's probably true. I mean, I don't think they'd let him say it if it wasn't true. It's probably true. They're probably WWE probably told him to go in there and cut some songs. We'll sell it. Song he did was very funny. Again, though, he has no heat. Even though, yes, if he's going to say Boston, you know, is an idiot, Boston's going to boo. But they still love him. He really doesn't have that heat. He's a comedic heel who people think is cool. Corbin's the opposite. Corbin actually has some heat. Finn Balor, who is considerably, I think, a lot of his pop has died through mostly the fault of the WWE, and Bobby Roode, who's almost completely died thanks to the WWE, team up to fight them. And again, if you've been a wrestling fan for more than, you know, a year, you could sit there and say, well, look, we know what's happening. Bobby Roode's taking the fall. They're not going to let Finn, because they're still not sure what to do with Finn. Is he a contender? Isn't he a contender? He's still got to fight Baron Corbin. Bobby Roode has nothing to do on Extreme Rules, so he's the one who's going to take the fall. And that's exactly what happened. But they were smart. They let Baron Corbin get the win. Because Elias didn't need it, because to my knowledge, he ain't doing anything Extreme Rules either. So they let Baron Corbin get the win. The right guy won under the right circumstances. The little bit of interaction he had with Finn Balor, I thought was good. I thought they had a decent chemistry together, better than some that have fought Baron Corbin. And this is one of the matches I'm actually looking forward to at Extreme Rules. So while this wasn't exactly what I would call a, you know, five-star match, it did accomplish its purpose, Mike.
It really did, and that's the thing now. You know, I'm going to say if he is going to cut a record, I'm going to buy that record, you know.
Yeah, I am too.
Just for the, you know, that guy. And look, like you said, he's a comedic heel that they've, I mean, I don't know why they're not pulling the trigger on turning him. I guess because they don't have any heels.
Yeah.
But they should, if he's not getting any heel heat, and people are going, we like this guy, we're, and no matter how much he insults us, we're going to cheer it. Turn him head,
yeah,
turn him face.
When you have to go there to get a boo, like, you know, like Mojo right now doesn't have to go there to get a boo. Mojo didn't come out here and say, "You, everyone in Boston sucks. I hate Boston. The Red Sox suck and everybody sucks." He didn't have to do that. Fans just kind of naturally say, "I don't like him. I don't like the way he walks. I don't like the way he looks. I don't like his attitude." That's a heel. For some reason, Elias's guitar playing and his songs and his whole persona is too cool to boo. So he has to go there. He has to, you know, he has to insult the audience in order to get any heat at all. And when you have to go there repeatedly because they're cheering you up to that point, it's time to think about you. You might as well flip them because, you know, this isn't working. You're not going to make any faces off of Elias. Nobody's going to say, "Oh, man, I hope this guy beats Elias." Nobody's going to say that. But Mike's hit the nail on the head. The reason they don't do it is they don't have any heels. They don't have any heels that fans will really boo. So you're right. I mean, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Decent match. Again, what I did think stood out in this match, Todd, is that Finn Balor and Baron Corbin have a little bit of chemistry in the ring. And that has been a problem with Baron Corbin and his opponents. Nakamura, who's a great wrestler, no chemistry in the ring when he fought Baron Corbin. Cena, no chemistry in the ring when he fought Baron Corbin. Corbin has a problem with having any kind of real chemistry in the ring with people. And this is the closest I've seen to actually saying, yeah, these guys work well together.
You're absolutely right there. The part I laughed at was the Itsy Bitsy Spire parody of Itsy Bitsy Bauer.
Yeah, he did a good job with that. But this goes to show you what I'm talking about. Elias sings a negative song about his opponents, and people are laughing and cheering. Corbin sings a negative song about Finn Balor, and fans are booing. That's because Corbin isn't represented as being a cool character, Mike.
That's right. He's more representative of being the guy that you want to dislike. That, you know, in other words, he's basically your stand-in for Stephanie. I mean,
right.
We know how people feel about Stephanie McMahon when she comes out in character and does what she does. No matter what she says, she's going to get booed. And right now, it's getting to the point of it doesn't matter what Corbin's going to say, he's going to get booed, you know?
Yeah, they have potential there. If they can, and to their credit, they let Baron Corbin win the match. He's the guy who needs the heat. Right now, Elias doesn't need the heat. He doesn't need the win. The right person won. The right person lost. Because Bobby Roode has nothing to do with Extreme Rules, so now you say, well, okay, maybe Baron Corbin's team won, but he didn't beat Balor. And that's what we're going to see. So this particular match, the WWE didn't make any mistakes. They did the right thing. And that's why it's successful, and that's why I'm actually looking forward to seeing the match. Because I have some questions about who's going to win it. You would have to think that they want to continue Corbin's heat. Corbin's got to win, but Finn Balor can't suffer too many more losses and still be relevant. So this is going to be a very interesting match. Now, earlier on in the night, Seth Rollins had come out. He's easily the most popular guy there. I mean, let's just get that, you know, straight cleared away. Fans come to see Seth Rollins at this point. He just sticks his head out of the dressing room and they cheer. And he's learned to play the audience. So one thing Seth Rollins didn't do well as a face when he first turned face, he didn't understand it. And he didn't know how to play that audience for what they're worth. Now he does. And he absolutely plays that audience to get the maximum pop he possibly can get out of that crowd. And they love him. So anybody that opposes him is going to get heat, which is a good thing. For Dolph Ziggler, who comes out and sort of half blows a promo, which Dolph Ziggler doesn't do very much. He's usually really good on the mic, but he stumbled a little bit this time. What I liked about Ziggler, though, is Ziggler is the... What's the right word for it? Ziggler is the guy who you could say whatever you want, and he doesn't really get mad. He just laughs and says, whatever, I'm better than you. Make jokes, make fun. I know, I'm this, I'm that. Big deal. Who cares what you think? Where the absolute antithesis of this is Drew McIntyre, who, if you make fun of him, he gets mad, mad enough to attack you. So they're not the same guy at all. Not at all. That I like. So McIntyre, when basically Seth Rollins accuses him of sleeping with a sheep, says, well, I have an idea. How about you man up and fight me tonight? And that match was made for the main event. Now, this morning, I was reading through a lot of emails and a lot of social media saying, you know, the match was okay, but it was kind of slow-paced. This was exactly the type of wrestling match I like. It starts out slow because by the nature of wrestling, it should. You start out with holds. You start out with trying to wear the guy down. You start out slow so you can build to that finish. It's like a fireworks display. They never start the fireworks display with the grand finale. There's one decent one. There's a couple of minor ones. There's some ground fireworks, and it builds, and it gets better and better, and then boom. That was what this match was. By the late middle of this match into the last portion of it, I think this was an excellent match. It showed how much Drew McIntyre is fantastic. When Corey Graves says Drew McIntyre is not the same guy, it's not even a shtick. It's not even a gimmick. He's not the same guy. He has come leaps and bounds, and he was good to begin with. That's the thing. He wasn't used well, but he was good to begin with, and he's better than good now. And when I watch him, the only thing I can say is, this is a guy who you could conceivably use on top for a long period of time, but you got to get him away from this tag team thing. You got to get him away from being Dolph Ziggler's, you know, bodyguard type deal. And I think that's coming. I don't know whether he's going to go face or stay heel. I don't know. But I think the breakup will probably come. I thought it was an excellent match. They put, of course, on the line that if he lost, he couldn't accompany Dolph Ziggler to ringside, which was a great swerve because I know most people thought either he's going to get counted out, Dolph's going to interfere and get him disqualified and screw himself. Somehow Seth is going to win. And he didn't win. He lost. And in doing so, he really sold that Claymore kick as just like, lights out, goodbye, you're not getting up from it. I'm not getting up from it, you're not getting up from it, nobody's getting up from it. And I think this did more to sell Seth Rollins as a guy you want to root for to beat Dolph Ziggler, and it did more to sell Drew McIntyre as a heel, who you want to see somebody really come up against who can match him power for power, as anything I've seen in a long time. So I thought this was a very, very successful main event, Mike.
Right. You know, remember what Vince McMahon called him? He called him the chosen one.
Yep.
You know, and he's kind of, as soon as he can get away from this tag team, he can basically be that guy, be the guy as a heel for somewhat long time. I mean, that's who he is right now. Look, this wasn't the only time they had people selling finishing maneuvers the way you should sell finishing maneuvers. You know, we knew twisting stunner from the top rope. All the girls sell that thing like they don't get up from it, just like the Claymore kick, just like the zigzag. You know, there are certain moves that they do protect here, and that's what we've said needs to be done with these guys. If you give them a move, if you give them a finishing maneuver, that finishing maneuver needs to be protected for them to be an effective guy. And one thing I enjoyed, I laughed out loud when Seth Rollins called him a Wookiee.
Yeah, a Scottish Wookiee. Look, Yeah, they got to protect finishing maneuvers more, but it means more when a guy like Seth Rollins takes the one shot and it's lights out. It's not like, oh, I almost kicked out. It was 1, 2, 3. Oh, there came my leg up, but no, it was too late. No, it was lights out. And when you sell a move to that degree, that helps that wrestler. It helps that wrestler a lot because now that move looks legit. It didn't beat Sin Cara. It beat Seth Rollins. So that means something. That's why I hate it when you see, like, you know, these main matches and the guy gives them 2 or 3 of his finishers. No, he kicked out. How did he do it? Oh, well, I don't know how he did it because nobody else has done one. You know, so I don't like it. Just don't use it. I've never been a fan of that. But overall, I think this was a really good match. I think it helped Seth Rollins because it created some sympathy for Rollins going in. I find myself rooting for Rollins, which is weird because I'm like, well, technically Ziggler as champion is a good idea. Really good idea. Let Rollins go on to major stuff. But I find myself having to sort of root for Rollins just because of the way this story's playing out. And I got in the back of my mind, it's going to, you know, McIntyre's getting involved. No doubt in my mind. So it's interesting. I'm going to have to give this Raw, for a go-home show, it didn't exactly encourage me to, I can't wait to see what's going to happen Sunday. So in that aspect, it failed. But in the aspect of being just a good standalone show, I would say it did pretty well. I'm going to give it a B, just a flat-out B. I don't think it was outstanding, and I think as a go-home show, it would probably be B- or C. But as a standalone show, I'm going to give it a B, Mike. How about you?
I'm going to go ahead and give it a C+. Just for the simple fact of what you just said, as a go-home show, most of the stuff on the show was good, but because it's supposed to be your go-home show, that's going to knock my grade down to a C+. I would have given it a B, like you did, but it's a go-home show.
It is a go-home show, and it didn't really make me want to watch any of the matches any more than I did before this show, with the possible exception of Lashley and Roman. Maybe I want to watch that one a little bit more. And maybe I want to watch, I won't even say Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler, because I wanted to watch that anyway. Todd, what's your rating on this?
I got to go with you, a flat out B.
So as a go-home show, it wasn't brilliant, but I actually was entertained, at least by Raw. It had its shortcomings. It had things that made me scratch my head and say why, and it had some things that I really think were detrimental to the overall story that they're trying to tell. But there were more positive things this time than good than bad. So for that reason, our average is right around a B-, I would say. Obviously, we will be here Sunday, and we will give you the whole rundown on all the Extreme Rules matches and our predictions for that event. We will see you then. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.